the conversation is very much so just around, like, you know, the things that are maybe we take for granted, but that for a little one, it's like, it's the practice, it's a repetitive reminding, and it's the practice of it. But, you know, just the other day, I was like, okay, when you cough, you got to cough in your arm. If you sneeze, you know, you can sneeze in your arm, you can lift up your shirt, you know, if you need a tissue, washing your hands after we've been out somewhere. But then also, right, because we do have a garden, it's like allowing him space to just get in it, you know, literally just get in the soil, get your hands caked, get your clothes dirty. It's fine. Make a mess with your food. There's helpful bacteria in the soil, you know. To make a mess with your food, you get to explore in that way. So it's a both and, you know. It's like, yes, we have to do these things to keep ourselves and others safe, and we can also get in the soil, get dirty. And when we are around little ones, other little ones, like he's in a gym class now. And, you know, just again, practicing those respectful, those things that keep you accountable. I feel like for everyone, you know, and to be mindful about how your actions influence other people, how your decisions influence other people. Another thing too is I used to, when he was really little, which is not something that I did consciously because of the pandemic, but I just kind of did it. But I sort of rethought or remade some nursery rhymes that I thought were, they just kind of came quite naturally, but they kind of helped me even sort of broaden my perspective of, you know, the universe and the cosmology of the universe. So I'm trying to think of one because I haven't said it to him in a while. So one thing that we try to do every morning is to just give thanks to Creator, give thanks to Father Sky, Mother Earth, Grandfather Sun, Grandmother Moon, all relations. I think that helps too, even in those little day-to-day things that I mentioned of sneezing in your, or coughing in your arm or something, or, you know, being mindful not to bump into somebody. And if you do, you apologize, you know, all of those little things help to build relationship. Trying to think of another one if I can. Okay, here's another one. So I used to say all the time to him, twinkle, twinkle in the night sky, stars shine bright, hugis between, which is the word for star in Tagalog, because he is part Filipino. Stars shine bright, hugis between. They fall to the earth, become dust, and then they become us. We are made of stars. We are star people. So just like those, you know, that's an example of one thing, you know, so it's like, helping him, it goes back to place, have a concept of his place in the world, and then also that there's a cosmology out there that informs everything. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but if you want to know something more specific, please let me know.
You're doing perfect.
Okay.
I'm so curious about how discussions in your intergenerational home went about different needs about safety and different needs to access to different services and different boundaries.
Yeah. So, the conversations were, I want to say in the beginning, we all kept a little quiet. we kind of formed our opinions to ourselves, certainly informed by family and other things, but to each other, we didn't talk about it at first. And then when the vaccine was available, when that became more readily available, that's when we really started to, you know, people's opinions came out, you know. And I feel like there was a level of respect. And I also feel like there was just a level of, what do I say? A level of just knowing that this person's opinion differs and you just have to keep it moving because you live in the same household. Whether or not those things have been resolved, like, so for an example, my mother and I think similarly in terms of the vaccination. My little one's opinion is, you know, not formed around that yet, but he has other vaccines. And I stopped, let me think here. I may have had some antibodies in breast milk, but we stopped breastfeeding, you know, at least a few months before, if not 6 months, 9 months before the pandemic actually, you know, kind of rolled out. So, you know, I was curious about that, you know, and then, you know, other people in the household, they were very staunch, like they were skeptical, you know, is the best word for it. And I understand that because I felt that as well. Skeptical about the whole thing, not just the vaccine, but just about, is this conspiracy? Was it planned? You know, all of that. And I get that. I really do. I also, you know, pandemics happen, you know, while the timing of some of them may be curious, it, you know, they happen and it's a part of our larger ecosystem, right? But there was some skepticism, very much so some differing of opinions, a lot of tension. And so the conversation that I would have with my partner were different than the one that I would have with my mom. And while I feel like the conversations with my partner were more difficult, specifically around the pandemic and the virus, we had the conversation. We went through the hard conversation and we came out of it better understanding ourselves and each other and better understanding how we want to move forward. Individually and as a family. With my mom, it was a conversation. Certainly we had similar beliefs and also though it was, they were challenging in the sense that, you know, because of the presidency under which this pandemic happened, there was just so much energy toward, there was so much energy put toward blaming this one particular person for the array of things that went down. And it just was exhausting. Like most mothers and daughters or, you know, mothers and children, our relationship was learning that once we lived together was strained and it became more strained. And so there were conversations that didn't necessarily involve anything to do with the pandemic, but that just were not being had, that needed to be had, you know. So while it wasn't pandemic specifically related, it just was this satellite, you know, they were these satellite of conversations that weren't happening. So it was a very interesting place to be in, to be having hard conversation over here about something specific. And then not having conversations, though having similar opinions about the pandemic with this other person, but these other conversations were, you know, so it left this kind of weird void in a sense on that side of things. And, you know, it just kind of makes me think of, I guess as a mother too, it makes me think of what gets unresolved, I guess, in your relationship with your children or with your parent, you know, all that gets left unresolved. And I think thinking about that in the face of so much grief over the last 2 years, I think about that too. All that doesn't get said or is miscommunicated or just doesn't have a period. And some things don't have a period. Sometimes things don't have a period and they shouldn't, but yeah, I would say of the conversations that were had, they were, some of them were more difficult than the others, and some of them related to the pandemic were, again, similar in opinion, but then this emphasis on the blame, which I wasn't really interested in. So that just didn't feel like it was an actual conversation. It felt like it was just a, you know, yeah, like just this monologue in some ways. Yeah.
What's partnership meant to you?
Partnership has meant a lot of different things. Oh, gosh. Related to the pandemic, can I confirm? Yeah. I've found partnership. So for my, I think about this in context of partnership as it relates to my little one, right? As well as myself. So, you know, it has been, it felt isolating, certainly in the beginning. I had felt isolated before. My partner was gone a lot for work. Sometimes, unfortunately, some days would be out and would not really get a chance to see him. We'd be up early in the morning. So he would really wouldn't get to see our son. And that felt isolating. That felt alienating. I felt very alone. And then to have this sort of strained relationship with my mom, that also was, you know, kind of perpetuated that. The pandemic heightened all of that. And so, but I had to shift my thinking around letting myself, I guess, just bringing some softness into the relationship, not because I thought that, not because my mother necessarily was willing to change anything, but I knew I had to in order to get through things. So I had to bring in some softness. If we're going to get through this, I have to just be softer with things within myself, give myself some grace. And then in there, I felt like we could partner a little bit better, helping to, with, you know, the needs of my son and just the needs of trying to, you know, keep things going with household and all of that. My partner, I felt, was absent for some of it, just because of the nature of his job. Things started to change. He got a different job. He switched jobs. And so it got better, because then he was present more. He was there more. So that changed that partnership dynamic where I didn't feel so as alone or as isolated. And I felt like I could rely on him. Before, I didn't really feel like that. I felt like I was kind of like on this island, surrounded by these two other islands that were my mom and him. But there was no cohesiveness. There was no attempt to share supplies, you know, that kind of thing. It kind of felt like, I found partnership also within relationships online. So colleagues, that was a saving grace, hands down. Connecting with friends from the past, that I've been friends with for a long time, though virtually, that was a saving grace. At the time, I was also doing a breathwork certification, and so I was meeting every week for a period of time during the pandemic. Part of it was spent getting the certification. The other part was spent hosting or facilitating space for women of color every week again to practice breathwork together. That was a saving grace. And then when I started to see folks again, started to see patients in the clinic again, that was really helpful too. And that was resonated back to me. I started with really low numbers. You know, I intentionally saw only a few people at a time, sometimes only one person a day. You know, I kept it really low, the census low. But people would always tell me, like, I'm like, this is like the only thing I've done this week. I'm glad that you're open. You know what I mean? So that was helpful to hear. And it was also helpful for me to, you know, to allow myself time to do my work and then be more confident that my little one was okay with my mom and not be so tight around that, you know, cause that was also a stress factor. So I would sum that up to say that partnership has really, for me, been about like it's felt, I guess I could express it that way. It's felt like a softening and it's felt like a being more expansive, more mile deep instead of mile wide, you know, kind of framework. Yeah.
Love to hear what your work in breath work, how that engages with our moment with a respiratory illness. So how are you seeing breath? How are you working with it?
So I did my training about a year after my father passed in November. So it was like the timing of it was meaningful or significant for me in that way. And in Chinese medicine, the breath is really what we refer to as qi in many senses. And the breath, the universe itself has a breath, and the breath patterns itself. And so we can see this breath pattern in everything from, you know, the rate of our own breathing and as humans, but also in the pattern of a leaf, in the graining of wood, in the way that the water ebbs and flows from the ocean and onto sand. And there are other patterns too, like viruses, right? That's a pattern too, the way that it manifests. And that particular pattern was put into motion by other patterns, right? So, and then also the breath, it is that vital life force or prana or chi. And so it also plays into our lung and large intestine system. So I think about it this way. This is kind of like my trail of thinking about it as I answer your question. And with the lung and large intestine, the emotion is grief. And so it's all very well. Again, these patterns are very well connected. You know, it's not on accident. It's not by chance. Maybe some of it is, but, you know, it's also a chance that happens to be very auspicious. And so it was no wonder to me. It was curious, but not wonder, I guess, to me that we are in this moment, this pandemic, this time in history where we're all going through this grave grief and we can't breathe. And, you know, George Floyd, I can't breathe. How many times has that been said? But I feel like at that moment, it was heard by people who didn't necessarily hear it before. And so this concept of this idea of breath and breathing and what that means, and through the pandemic, I saw also research being done. Well, maybe new research, but from an old way of thinking, you know, indigenous folks from various countries and communities, especially in East Asia and Southeast Asia, have utilized the breath to keep themselves healthy. And I did see, I think probably about the middle of the pandemic, doctors starting to speak out advocating the use of breath work. So that was really great to see for COVID recovery. I worked with a few folks who were post-COVID, and it was hard. It was challenging. But also just the sheer amount of grief was hard for people to breathe through. I had that in my own experience. And because the fear factor plays in, and in Chinese medicine, the water phase is associated with fear and kidneys. And so, and this is true in Western science or medicine as well. And the kidneys and the lung have they have a relationship and they help each other out. One is sort of an upper source of water and fluid regulation and, you know, turning over, and the other is a sort of lower source of fluid regulation. And in Chinese medicine, the kidneys have to be willing to receive that qi, to receive the breath. And if there's so much fear that your breath can't root down, right, if there's so much grief that you cannot root your breath, that's a very real thing. Whether it sounds like it's because I realize that might sound maybe esoteric, but it's also really true anatomically. if for an example, a lot of us tend to inhale because, you know, whenever we say take a deep breath, it's like, but where's the rest of it? What happens to the breath after? You know what I mean? We can inhale all we want, but if we're not exhaling fully, then we're not getting as much oxygen as we actually could be optimally. So the exhale is just as important. And in exhaling, your diaphragm is allowed to kind of rest back up, allowed to ascend a bit. And the breath then can kind of find its way back or find its way to its paired or its partner water source. And here's another, way of partnering, right? But again, if there's so much emotion involved in those functions and those systems that it's overwhelming, then it's literally hard to breathe. We literally cannot breathe. And also our environment is and has been becoming a place that is hard to breathe in so many ways, but certainly through pollution and other environmental factors that, I live near, there's a refinery here in my town. So growing up with that and then coming back here to live here, it's a reality for a lot of people. A lot of people do have respiratory issues and cardiovascular issues. And so there's that component of it as well. But yeah, I think in that, what I'm getting more curious about is, we are able to breathe because early ancestors, moss relatives, early plant relatives decided that they were going to migrate, in part it was due to water fluctuation, right, in terms of sea level. But then also they were like, well, let's, whatever in them decided to like hang out on, and make that migration, whatever was in them, whether it was a trauma, who knows, it could have been a trauma, it could have been something that forced them to make that move, could have been curiosity, could have been all at the same time, all of those things could be true, but whatever it is, they decided and they moved to land and they were able to form more complex plant life. And because of plant life we're here, because of plant life we have the ability to take in oxygen, and that plants expire out. And so there's a relationship there. And I guess in all of it, especially after these last 2 years, am curious about that, you know, like, what does that mean that that's where we really started in a lot of ways? And what can that mean for helping ourselves to breathe more fully, and breathe more freely, you know?
You'd mentioned earlier the crisis on top of crisis on top of crisis that we've witnessed recently. I just wanted to open some space for you to share more about what that sort of compounding experience of one thing after another has been like for you. And you've mentioned some, but to also just create a bit more room for you to discuss what some of the heavier things on your mind and heart have been over the last couple of years that aren't just COVID.
These that aren't just COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm a Pisces. So it's kind of sometimes hard for me to like separate things out, because I'm like, but it's all one thing connected. Although I do have a lot of fire, you know, in my chart too, so it helps with that. But I think it goes back to, patterns to me. You know, it goes back to, what do we see in the patterns that are presenting? When it comes to, for an example, a pattern of lack of the ability to breathe, you know, as an example, whether it's because of COVID, I guess what I'm saying is, so people might have various or varying levels of inability to breathe, or something that is restricting their breath. It could be an illness. It could be COVID related, a long-term chronic illness. It could be because they can't breathe as a result of environmental pollution, right? And all of those things, all of those different things might also intersect. And so it could be that somebody has a chronic illness, and we saw this play out in the pandemic. Somebody has a chronic respiratory or cardiovascular illness, and they live in an environmentally toxic environment, and they're a person of color, and their access to certain healthcare, or their access to certain living in a different place, their generational access has been restricted. And so all of these things intersect and lead to a sort of pattern of not being able to breathe, like literally being strangled for breath. They might also have a congenital history of trauma. Although yes, that might be true, but asthma as an example, right? And that just kind of also could play into, you know, family history, and it can also play into the environmental piece. And so it goes back, if we're talking about like the pandemic as a crisis, an environmental catastrophe, or climate crisis as a crisis, or racism as a crisis, capitalism as a crisis, the continuation of colonization as a crisis. All of those things just, I guess it is hard to, sometimes it's hard to piece it out, you know, it is all very much so threaded together. I think there's value in understanding how one piece is different from another piece, like how the climate is very specific in its presentation, that as a pattern, the crisis of a warming climate, how that actually manifests and what that actually means, and what that kind of transformation will actually look like. And it's also important to understand and unpack how racism affects people and how that manifests in that pattern, that continuation of colonization is patterned, and how it manifests in people, or how it manifests in relationships. I think it's important to kind of make sure we understand those things as they are, and also to draw those lines, you know, to if everything was up on a board, sort of we have these circles of things, but then also doing the work now, I think especially, and organizers have been doing this work that's a large portion, I think, of